Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com or CommunityProgressiveRadio.org. This week's Soapbox, we have San Francisco-based attorney Inder Komar. And we had Inder on the show a few weeks ago. If you remember, he's in the process of filing a lawsuit against the Bush administration through his website, Witness Iraq. There have been some developments on the case, and I want to present the interview with Inder again because it's still relevant and it's still ongoing. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with the interview that I did with Inder Komar of Witness Iraq. Inder Komar, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you for having me, Cindy.
Well, I am on a cell phone in I'm in Gallup, New Mexico. I don't even know where I am. It's been a whirlwind. And so I'm just trying, just like I told you, I'm just trying to, you know, keep my show going whenever I can. And
right.
I met you at the protest against the dedication of the Bush Library or Presidential Center or whatever it is in Dallas, Texas. And I thought since, you know, the movement did focus on that a little bit this past week, that I would have you on to explain what you are trying to do. So, Inder, again, welcome, and please tell my listeners about the lawsuits you filed.
Absolutely. So, thank you again, Cindy, for having me. It was a real pleasure and honor to meet you at the protest in Dallas, you know, during the war, or during the Bush era, I should say. I was a very keen follower of yours, so it was a real pleasure to actually connect with you in person. I'm an attorney in San Francisco. I practice, most of my work is corporate, but I do human rights cases as well. And a month ago, on March 13th, I actually filed two lawsuits here in federal court in the Northern District of California against members of the Bush administration, including George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, and Paul Wolfowitz in their personal individual capacities for the Iraq War. And the theory is that the war was a crime of aggression under Nuremberg. So there's two lawsuits, one on behalf of an Iraqi plaintiff who I represent. The Iraqi case is a class action on behalf of Iraqi civilians. And the case, the complaint alleges that the war was planned as early as 1998 on the website, the Project for the New American Century. And then the lawsuit alleges that once these individuals came to power, they used 9/11 as an excuse to execute their plan to invade Iraq. And under Nuremberg, under the Nuremberg trials, which were trials that the United States held against the Nazis at the end of World War II, that's illegal. You can't plan and prepare a war and then come to power and then execute that war. So the Iraqi woman is exercising jurisdiction of the court through the Alien Tort Statute, which is a law that was passed by the first Congress. That's how she's able to come to court. The second lawsuit is on behalf of myself as a United States citizen, and that lawsuit alleges that I have a common law or constitutional right to honest information from government officials with respect to war and peace. And that's not a right that I or any other U.S. citizen currently have. So under our current legal framework, politicians are under no obligation, legal obligation, to provide honest information on critical matters to our society. And, you know, people say, well, you know, the remedy should be political, that you should impeach these people if they lie. But I think as the war showed, that's not really a realistic remedy. We need a legal remedy where people can go to court against officials who lie about things, and especially about issues that are so critical to the citizenry, such as war. So those are the lawsuits, and since then I've basically been trying to spread the word about them. We're doing a fundraising campaign. Since I filed the lawsuits, I have notified the defendants through the mail of the existence of these civil lawsuits, and the next step in the case will be to actually issue the summons. So I'll get a court summons that will be served on the defendants over whom I can serve for sure. Condoleezza Rice can be served because she's a teacher at Stanford, and I'll work with the court to serve the other defendants. But this lawsuit is happening right now, and you know, these people will be hailed into a courtroom within the next, I would say, 30 to 45 days.
Okay, I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
You know, to clarify it for myself, because, you know, I'm certainly no attorney, but I have been following, you know, these matters very closely since my son was killed. First of all, okay, let me see. What's the order of these questions I should ask you? Okay, first of all, does federal court have standing if the, you know, you allege that the, and you allege, but, you know, and I just want to say I totally agree with everything that you said.
Yeah.
If you're alleging that these people violated Nuremberg principles, wouldn't the International Criminal Court or The Hague have standing in this?
Okay, that's a great question. So the Hague actually is a great question. You know, they actually, on their books, they recognize the crime of aggression, what we've alleged. They haven't defined it yet. And as you may or may not know, the United States, you know, has refused to sign the treaty, the own statute that authorizes The Hague to prosecute war crimes or this crime of aggression. But this is a civil case, and the law that we're using, the Alien Tort Statute, allows non-U.S. citizens, so they have to be a non-U.S. citizen, which is great because we have this Iraqi plaintiff, to come to court and allege violations of international law. So for the last, and this law has been in the book for the last, since 1789. But then in the last 20 to 30 years, there's been a huge human rights movement that's grown up basically around this law, and people have come to U.S. court alleging, summary executions or genocide or crimes against humanity. And actually, just 2 weeks ago, the U.S. Supreme Court heard and decided a big issue about this law, because I guess they were, you know, the U.S. Supreme Court was concerned about the scope of the law, and they've actually, quite frankly, gutted about 20 years of human rights law. There was a case brought by, I believe, Nigerian plaintiff Chevron. I'm sorry, not Chevron, Royal Dutch Shell, which is a Dutch company, alleging, you know, summary executions and crimes against humanity. And the Supreme Court threw that lawsuit out under this law, saying there's just not enough close connection with the United States. So they basically narrowed the lawsuits that can be brought under this law, that they have to have some connection to the United States. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, this complaint is still valid. I mean, the planning took place in the United States, but these were all United States citizens. They were, you know, people of some importance in the United States for 8 years. So we feel that, you know, even under that recent case, this case can still be heard. But this is a law in the books that allows non-U.S. citizens to grant, to come to court to violations of international law. There's nothing that prevents a criminal court ever from issuing an indictment if that were the case, but that would be a completely separate and distinct procedure.
Okay, now, great, thank you. My second question would be, is there some law that protects elected officials, maybe just the president, from being accountable like this from things that he or she did while in office? Because it says it, like, inhibits their, their ability or flexibility in acting for some kind of national security threats?
So that's a great question, and we addressed that in the complaint. So there is a 5-4 United States Supreme Court decision from, I believe, 1982, Nixon v. Fitzgerald, I want to say. Nixon was definitely in the case title. I forget if it's Fitzgerald, but I'm 90% sure. And in that case, in a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court said that the U.S. president has civil immunity for actions taken while in office. And, you know, that's very scathing, basically, because the dissent said that this kind of gets the whole idea of holding leaders accountable under law. Now, that being said, Bill Clinton, there was a case before the Supreme Court in the 90s when Bill Clinton was sued for sexual harassment, I believe, and I believe that Paula Jones. And there, in a 9-0 decision, the Supreme Court said the president does not have immunity for activities taking place prior to when he comes to office. So just because he's president, if the activity occurred prior to him becoming president, he can still be taken to court. And that was a 9-0 Supreme Court decision. So basically, under our allegations, we're alleging that the crime against aggression was initiated in 1998 when Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz sent a letter to then-President Clinton, still on the Internet, if it's still available online, where they said that the former Hussein and invade Iraq. So they said this as early as 1998. So as far as we're concerned, the facts began in 1998. To the extent that the court disagrees and says, well, Bush is at least immune, the second argument I'm prepared to take to the court is that when the president commits crimes under international law, whether it's genocide or crimes against humanity or the crime of aggression, which I should also note that the Nuremberg court said that the crime of aggression was, quote-unquote, the supreme international crime, and this crime is greater than genocide because there wouldn't be any genocide if you didn't plan the war in the first place. So I'm prepared to tell the court that if, you know, there has to be an exception for when the president commits violations of gross violations of international law. It can't be the case, you know, if Bush or Cheney or Obama or any president, I'm saying it was the president, but, you know, if Obama or Bush or any president built gas chambers and put stars on people, it's unfathomable to me that he would be immune from civil liability. And the crime of aggression is a greater crime than that. So I'm prepared to tell that to the court. And in the worst case scenario, if the court finds some immunity for Bush, that case only holds that there's immunity against the president, him or herself. These other officials have no immunity just because they were in the government. And that's the kind of form book civil rights law.
Well, I did look it up, and it was Nixon v. Fitzgerald. So,
okay, great. Okay.
Yeah, good job. So I guess, you know, another question would be, you know, I would really love to see this lawsuit happen, but does the federal court that you filed in have to hear it?
Yes. So it's a civil case. So our Constitution, I mean, we have an 800-year-old right to petition the courts, petition the government for redress of injuries. And the way I tell it to people is if George Bush, you know, hit your car and, you know, you get out of your car and it's George Bush and if he was responsible, you might say, oh, Lord, wow, nice to meet you, but, you know, you banged up my car and you have to pay me now or I'm going to pick you to small claim. And mm-hmm. there would be no issue about that. And similarly, it's the same principle. If he commits if he or any other government official is responsible for damages, for damaging other humans, our courts permit that remedy. So what would happen is the court has to issue the summons. The summons, once issued, will be served on these defendants. And at that point, they are within the jurisdiction of the court. And the court, they can file paperwork to certainly dismiss the complaint. And they can, at that point, there will be a big motion battle to determine whether the civil complaint should be heard or proceed to discovery, which would be the next stage of the lawsuit. But that, you know, whether or not the court has to hear it, there's no question. I mean, the court will hear the motion to dismiss, which there almost certainly will be. And if the complaint is dismissed, then there will be an appeal. But as of today, you know, this is within the United States court system. And if they don't respond, if they completely ignore the summons, then just like in any other civil action, there could be a default judgment. And they would be responsible for paying default fees on that.
So,
sorry, you know, I'm actually sitting at a cafe, so if it gets loud, yeah. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I think I'm good now.
Can you hear me?
There's a man walking by. Yeah, sorry about that. Go ahead.
So,
I don't know if you heard the music or not.
I'm not. I'm hoping that that you're breaking up a little, and I'm hoping that
okay.
It's just
can
on
I hear
my
you now?
End. I can hear you, but I hope it's just on my end and that the recordings
okay.
come through cleanly, because it's very important information that you're giving us. But I guess my final question would be, you know, what do you think of, you know, you mentioned that, oh, you know, we have political means, and, you know, that's what the politicians want to tell us, that, oh,
right.
just vote them out of office if you don't like them, but, you know, the
right.
vote is so compromised, or like you said, impeachment, but that's almost like the asking the police to police themselves. And the
right.
Obama administration has worked very hard to avoid prosecuting the Bush administration. I believe it's because, you know, Obama has carried out the same crimes of the Bush administration, and
uh-huh.
he doesn't want his predecessor, you know, he wants that professional courtesy also. So
right.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I think there's got to be a legal remedy. I think you've described the situation completely right. that the political process is not working. If impeachment were a remedy, then we should have impeached these people. And there has to be we have this tradition. We have an Anglo-American legal tradition that says that you can petition the courts, period. And that's a right that people have had for hundreds of years and centuries. And it's unfathomable to me that wouldn't permit people to access the courts for these types of issues and for these types of crimes, frankly. I think that's what's really going on here. And the courts are a third branch of government, and I think the courts, you know, frankly, they've given a lot of undue deference in other types of lawsuits. There was a lawsuit against John Yoo that was dismissed and upheld on was upheld on appeal. There was a lawsuit against Ashcroft for the 9/11 stuff, where he detained a lot of Arabs and Muslims based on profiling, and the Supreme Court tossed that lawsuit out. We have to use the third branch because the first two aren't working, and there is a third branch of government that we can go to. And I don't know. I'm going to do my best. I can promise you, and anyone who's listening, that I will do my absolute best to win this civil case. But if the third branch isn't working, then I think we need to know that as people, as citizens. We have a right to know if our government isn't functioning anymore. And if that's true, then we have to use other remedies. Maybe at that point the option is to go to state court and to file state complaints where a state judge would hear these things. Or I know Vincent Bugliosi has written a book where he advocates that a attorney general or a county prosecutor issue an indictment. And maybe that's the remedy. But I think we have to exercise all available legal tools and remedies at our disposal because it's our right to do that. And if we don't exercise them, then we lose those rights, and we can't afford to lose them. I'll tell you, I have clients. One of my clients I like the most, or I like all my clients. A client that I've learned a lot from, I could say, is a Chilean company, and I didn't know a lot about the history of Chile before I had them. And, the Chilean government was overthrown by the United States on September 11th, 1973, right. I believe. We installed a dictator, Pinochet, who killed people and who, they were able to come out of that by protesting and by through a vote, ultimately, that was held. And, if they tried to do what I'm trying to do or what you do or what anyone cares about advancing the status of democracy in our country, trying to do, they would have, we would be killed if this were Pinochet in Chile. And I think that we have to take advantage of the fact that we still have a little bit of freedom left to access the courts and to utilize this third branch and to do what we can to let people know in government and in authority that something has gone critically wrong with our country and to make sure to tell them that this can't happen again. I think that's also something, when Vietnam happened, people said, oh, well, we've all learned our lesson. We won't ever have any more pointless wars. And, there were not to mention all the other military actions that have taken place. And then, we invade Iraq, right? It's clear that the government
and
hasn't
Afghanistan.
Learned Afghanistan. And Afghanistan, by that, right?
Yeah, I don't think Afghanistan was justifiable either.
Exactly right. So I think that, it's clear that the government hasn't learned its lesson. And it's clear that we as citizens, this is, if you read the Federalist Papers and if you read the framers, they all say there's actually four branches of government, the fourth branch is the people. And we have to, band together. If the government it's not reflective of the will of the people anymore, then we have to do something about that because if we don't, then this will just happen again and again and again. And we have to stop that. We have to put our foot down and draw the line in the sand somewhere and make the government responsive to the will again of what's right and what's decent and what's constitutional, frankly. So I guess that's a very long answer to your question. I agree with you that the system isn't working.
Well, then I look at the government of Venezuela when they wrote a new constitution and ratified it in 1999. It gives people the power to recall the president. It gives the people the power to change the constitution and to hold their leaders accountable. And, our country was founded by the elites, and it's still run for and by the elites, or it's a plutocracy or whatever. And
right.
So I think that we can use both. I think that your movement can be a really, big grassroots movement to force the courts to act on this.
Exactly right. And again, if they don't, or if they're unwilling, or if the case is dismissed and upheld on appeal, or whatever the reasons are, I think, again, it's important that, that the people know that, because, you know, as a lawyer, you know, I took an oath. You know, I think every lawyer I've ever met has taken that oath seriously to uphold and defend the Constitution. And we need to know, as lawyers, we need to know if the courts are working and if they're not. You know, I can tell you that, you know, 9 times out of 10, the judges that I've encountered in my career have been very reasonable people. They want to do the right thing. They need a reason to do the right thing, you know, and that's where lawyers come in. And that's where someone hopefully like me comes in, is to give the courts a good reason to adjudicate a case and to declare, you know, to find, you know, it was a lawyer who went to court and said, it's not right that blacks are separate than whites in our public facilities. And it was a lawyer who went to court 200 years ago, it was John Adams, who went to court and said, you know, when the Boston Massacre happened and the people wanted to have mob justice, it was a lawyer who went to court and said, actually, we're going to give these people a trial. And, you know, they were convicted on manslaughter charges, as I recall. So we have a very strong legal tradition in this country that I think is very open and receptive to positive social change and to accountability and to honoring these ideals that we have of due process. And there's that thread that runs through our history. There's a story that we like to tell ourselves, that I believe that we are progressing in when it comes to due process and when it comes to, you know, accessing the courts and just opening up our democratic system to greater accountability. And that's what I want to tap into here. And, you know, if it doesn't work, then at least I'll know and other people will know that maybe the courts are foreclosing themselves as they have for the last 20 years in other areas. And if that's true, then that's at least an answer. And we know that we have to use other methods. Perhaps, like I said, going to state courts or using the state systems. I mean, in California, hey, Cindy, are you still there? Hey, Cindy, there's some music playing. Hey, Cindy, are you still there?
Ender, I'm sorry,
yeah.
My phone hung up. So just something about, at least you'll know that the courts or whatever you were saying.
Right,
and then,
Yeah, so at least we'll know, you know, if that happens, if the courts aren't open, and then, you know, we'll use other methods like going to state court, or maybe at that point we have to, you know, use the state systems. I mean, the framers talked a lot about that too. If you read the Federalist Papers, there's a great paper where they say, you know, they talk about the threat of a federal government spinning out of control. And they say if that happens, that's the beauty of the federal system. You go to your state court, go to your state legislatures, go to your state governments, and use your state power to rein in a militant or out of control federal government. And that's what the framers told us. And I think if the federal system isn't open to these type of things, then maybe that's the solution. And do what Bugliosi suggests, which is to, you know, get an attorney general or a deputy, DA somewhere to issue a complaint and do it that way. So,
Vincent's been trying that for years, and it hasn't worked.
Yeah, he's been trying that
for years. Well, Ender, we are running out of time, so
okay.
I will post all this information on my newsletter and website, but can you give the best website for your effort?
Sure, absolutely. And I would just give the witnessiraq.com. Is the website that we're running the cases out of. And there's a link to our fundraising campaign. We're hoping to raise $50,000, I think, in the next 27 days for the lawsuits. We've raised about $5,000, a little over $5,000. I'm very optimistic about, you know, even with that $5,000, you know, even if I hadn't raised a dollar, I'd still do the cases. But I think, you know, what we're trying to do is raise the money. I have a private practice on the side, so what I'd like to do is be able to team up with other lawyers, hire contract attorneys to do the paperwork, to do the pleading, pay for paper court filings and that type of thing. But that's what's happening on the Indiegogo campaign. But otherwise, yeah, the links to all that are on witnessiraq.com. There's copies of the complaint. You know, we will be going to Jordan in the next few months to gather more stories from Iraqis so that we have more named plaintiffs on behalf of the class action. And if anybody is interested in volunteering or in helping out with the lawsuits, if there's lawyers who are listening who want to be involved, please contact me. I will take, you know, I'd love to talk to other lawyers in particular who want to get involved and want to help out on the case. and hopefully, you know, do something that's precedent-setting and worthwhile and advances kind of this cause and advances the cause of accountability.
Well, Andrew, I'm hoping that the people will take the revolution, I mean, the solution that the framers took, and that's revolution, because, you know, I think the justice system failed so many of us many years ago. So, but I really wish you the best on your efforts, and I'll be following them closely, and like I said, we'll try and get you some support. So, Indra Komar, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Thank you, Cindy, for having me. Have a lovely time in New Mexico.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That's the show for today. I hope you found out something. I hope you learned something. And I wish Inder, of course, all the luck in the world of holding the Bush administration accountable for the terrible things it did while it was in office. That's the show for today. And as always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar. I'd like to thank my guest, Inder Komar. And I'd like to thank you for listening. Tour de Peace is in New Jersey now, and we're going to be heading south down to a washed up D.C. We have, as of this recording, 18 more days to go, and we've been on the road 62 days. So this is Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.